This episode is sponsored by State Farm. You a small business owner looking for insurance that fits your needs and budget? Well, look no further than State Farm. State Farm agents are not just insurance providers. They're also small business owners who live and work right here in your community. They understand the unique challenges of running and protecting a small business. When it comes to small business insurance, State Farm knows what it takes. Create a plan that fits your needs and your budget. State Farm agents are ready to help you choose personalized policies that truly understand your business. Insure your small business with a fellow small business owner. Talk to a State Farm agent today and get started on personalized small business insurance that fits your needs. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today.
I mean, you're living in your mother's basement writing a blog on finance. Really, you should stay off the computer, son, and get a job. Seriously.
Live from Joe's mom's basement, it's the Stacking Benjamin Show. I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug, and today, how much money will you need for retirement? A recent CBS News study shows a number that's much higher than previously thought. We'll break down how much you need and how to get saving for it. For our TikTok Minute, it's spring! Time to test your insurance packages. Well, that sounds kind of dangerous. Plus, we'll hear why Stacker Colin said, you know, I'd better call Saul. See hi and OG. And then I'll share some impartial trivia. And now, two guys who deserve some credit for my fame, it's Joe and O-J-J-J-J-G.
Well, must be magnanimous day on the podcast. Doug giving us a little credit. What's up with that, man?
I'm Meg something.
Wow. Welcome to the Kinder Gentler, Doug, on Wednesday. Happy middle of the week to everybody. This is the Stacking Benjamin Show, the greatest money show on earth. Sit back and relax, because you found us and we're about to hopefully help you get a better retirement, help you, test your insurance products and more today. We'll share exactly what we mean there. But first, let's share the man across the, what used to be the dinner table now is the little card table in the basement. Mr. OG's here. How are you, man?
I'm so grateful that Doug's got that like glass wall between us and him so he can... You can see his mouth moving and you're like, oh, I don't have to pay attention to that because he's on the glass wall. We call it the soundproof booth.
Like all the great drummers, they have those plexiglass.
Sorry. Go back. This is about you.
Yes. This is the wall that needed to be built. We've been talking about building walls a lot in America lately. This is the wall.
There you go.
Right there. That's good.
If we could just make it so he couldn't hear us, that would be chef's kiss.
OG, you know, we've been talking about retirement. Are you talking about Doug's retirement? Is that the deal?
Every day I think about it.
Think about helping him plan out the perfect retirement.
Thought and pray, light a candle, Doug, do all the things.
Doug, I'll work for you for free. Yes. Thoughts and prayers, Doug. Thoughts and prayers. We got a great show.
Hope and optimism.
And you know why we have a great show? We have a great show because it's free. And you know why it's free? Because we've got some kick-ass sponsors. And here's just a couple minutes of some of the people that pay for this for us. This episode is sponsored by State Farm. You a small business owner looking for insurance that fits your needs and budget? Well, look no further than State Farm. State Farm agents are not just insurance providers. They're also small business owners who live and work right here in your community. They understand the unique challenges of running and protecting a small business. When it comes to small business insurance, State Farm knows what it takes. Create a plan that fits your needs and your budget. State Farm agents are ready to help you choose personalized policies that truly understand your business. Insure your small business with a fellow small business owner. Talk to a State Farm agent today and get started on personalized small business insurance that fits your needs. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today. It's Military Appreciation Month, and I want to share appreciation for one of our stackers I met in Cleveland for the second time. Keith just drove his car off the road. But Keith, a proud military member, I enjoyed seeing Keith. And you know what? Eric was there too, who was in the Marines. But both of these fine gentlemen served our country that I met in Cleveland. I want to give a shout out to them. And this Military Appreciation Month, Navy Federal Credit Union wants to celebrate not just Keith and Eric, But all their members who go above and beyond, Navy Federal offers member-only exclusive rates, discounts, and tools to empower their members and help them reach their goals. They offer 24/7 help from their U.S.-based member service centers. They offer resources like Best Cities After Service to help veterans transition to civilian life and Best Careers for Military Spouses to support our military families. All branches of the military, veterans, DOD employees, and their families are eligible for Navy Federal membership. Visit NavyFederal.org/celebrate this month, and you'll see all of our Military Appreciation Month offers and other Navy Federal offers. Navy Federal is insured by NCUA, Equal Housing Lender. All right. Thanks to our sponsors. Thanks to all of you for hanging out. We got a show to remember here, so let's go.
Hello, darlings. And now it's time for your favorite part of the show, our Stacking Benjamin's Headlines.
Our headline today comes to us from CBS News, written by Amy Peachy. CBS, OG, has done a new study about how much Americans say they need to retire. It is substantially higher than what they said 4 years ago. How much money do you think Americans think they need to retire? You think it's higher than 4 years ago or lower than 4 years ago?
In your savings account? Oh, that would be great.
No, great start. No, yeah. Wouldn't that be great?
Be a great start.
In your savings account.
Oh, it's significantly higher now. Like this is what people think. This is an estimation of feelings.
Yes.
They feel.
So this isn't exactly what you need. This is what people think you need. So
this is what I feel I need. That number is going to be higher today than it was in 2020. Significantly so, I bet.
Northwest Mutual did the study back in 2020. They did it again this year.
The answer was insurance. Oh, sorry. Too soon?
Yes, right. How much higher do you think? It is higher. So maybe it could be a percentage higher.
I believe it's 50% higher.
Wow. The number, 53% higher. Nice job. People now think it takes 1.46 million
rules
to retire comfortably. By the way, Doug, just so that people get a little a view behind the curtain, neither you nor I pressed the applause button there. just so people know. Who was giving who the applause?
Am I allowed to talk? Am I allowed to reply to you on that? Or is that just
preferable?
Just smile and nod. It's $1.46 million, 53% more. But the bad news, now it's time for the bad news. You want the good news, the bad news? Time for the bad news. Most people are far from reaching that objective, with the study finding the average amount held in retirement accounts today, $88,400. Oh my goodness.
I'll be here all week, folks.
Doug, can you move the wall? It's time for us to move the wall. Ladies and gentlemen, put the wall between OG and his effects, please.
And the wall is being moved.
Oh, for God's sake.
Oh, God. A $1.37 million gap between their savings and their retirement aspirations. That's a big number, OG.
What's the age of the people that they're surveying here? And the reason I ask for this is because, you know, if you're thinking about it and you're 40, you're 45, you're 30, you're 50 even, and you're going, I got 200 grand, I have 300 grand, and I think I need $1.5 million, and you feel like you're way far off. But the power of compounding is so awesome that you just need to keep on investing and let it do its thing. If you just have your money invested in stocks, it's going to likely double every 7, 8, 9, 10 years, give or take, depending on how things shake out. Like that's historically the case. So if you're 40 and all, I'm using air quotes, all you have is $300,000 saved today, that's doubling at 50, 60, and 70. Yeah. I mean, that's 300 turns to 6 to 12 to 2.5 million by the time you're 70 without adding any more money. And that's probably worst case scenario using a 10 year number. So I feel frustrated when I see these sometimes because people look at it and go, oh my God, I need $1.5 million. But, you know, it really matters. Are you 64 with 300 grand? Yeah, you're going to work a little longer probably.
That's a good point, is that Amy and company don't give us an age here. So, you know, and if we have median age in America, let's say that it's mid 30s, 37, mm-hmm. 38 years old, that we're not as far behind as people think that they are.
Now, of course, that $1 million number also is increasing as well. So, you know, you can't wait and just say, well, you know, I'll wait till I'm 50 to start saving my million, because, you know, the million then is 2 million, you know, because the power of compounding works both ways, you know. But pricing power, the stock market, your investments are going to double maybe every 7 to 10 years. Your pricing power is going to be cut in half every 20 to 25 years. So that's kind of, you know, that's the trade that you make. That's why you have to invest in ownership of companies, because anything other than that, you're not keeping up with that inflation change. You look at, you know, your savings account rate is paying 5%, but how much does it cost to get a mortgage? 7. What's inflation? 4.5 or 5. Like, there's a reason why interest rates on your bank are high right now. It's because inflation sucks also, you know, I mean, and interest rates. So you can almost have a proxy for what's going on in pricing and what's going on in your purchasing power. You don't even actually need to forecast that. You can just go, well, I remember going to the grocery store a year ago, it didn't cost me $100. You know, now it does. You can feel it. Thinking about that into the future, it's very hard to imagine that if you're 40 today, by the time you're 65, milk's going to be $15 a gallon. That just doesn't seem like you're like, yeah, that's crazy. But if you're 40, you remember going and getting milk for a dollar. Like, it used to be a dollar a gallon. Eggs were, you know, 49 cents a dozen, and now they're $1.50 or $2. You know what I mean? Like, that just happens, except in some really small sectors of the economy, like energy and that sort of thing, where it's heavily subsidized. So you have to.
But even there.
Well, yeah, it certainly goes up, but it doesn't go up at the same rate as everything else, because there's a lot of things. You know, an interesting thing, thinking about inflation, I was thinking about this the other day. How many people in their financial plans account for their mortgage being gone? You know, mortgage is a big expense, right? You know, a couple $1,000 maybe.
Huge.
Yeah. I mean, relative to your outflow, and you go, hey, by the time I'm retired, whew, that'll be paid off. I'll challenge you to look at your property taxes and your house insurance and run some inflation calculators on that, just using normal inflation, because obviously.
I was thinking about this the other day. This is horrible, dude.
Yeah. You know where I'm going with it.
This is a nightmare.
You know, so your property taxes and your insurance are going to continue to increase, right? Because the value of your house hopefully goes up, so on and so forth. There is a strong likelihood. Let's say you just got a mortgage. You're 30 years old. You got your forever house. You're like, hey, by the time I'm 60, I'm going to be free and clear. Guess what? There's a pretty good chance that your property taxes and insurance will cost the same in 30 years from now as your total mortgage payment is today. I don't believe.
Boo.
Boo. Oh, gee, sucks. Oh, gee, sucks.
God, amen. Amen to that.
Yeah. I just don't think that it's a good idea from a planning standpoint to take that housing line item out of your budget in retirement, because those numbers are going to keep climbing, and you need to account for that. Now, if you're closer to retirement, then that doesn't work out as, you know, it works a little bit more favorably, but still your property taxes, you know, talk to somebody that's lived in your neighborhood for 30 years. I bet you the first, oh my God, when I was here, it used to be $300 a year. Now those SOBs charge us $3,000 a year. It's like, well, you know, what do you think is going to happen over the next 30 years? I don't know that it goes 10X, but, you know, it probably doubles. It probably triples. Compare that against what you're already paying. So I'd be interested to hear from people who are already retired, who have to see whether or not this has happened. This would be a fun thing for people to write in on.
Well, and this is what I'd like to do. I'd like to, well, first of all, when you talk about savings, let's go back to that and the fact that you have to invest in something that beats inflation, right? The ownership of companies.
The only thing that does
beats inflation. And that's why you do that. And that's why we always recommend, when you're starting out, don't overthink it. Start with a very simple index, like the total stock market index, the S&P 500. Don't spend a ton of time, like people in their 20s do, worrying about what to invest in. Just get invested. And if you're in one of those broad indexes, like the total stock market or the S&P 500, you're getting a little bit of everything. So you're going to go where the economy goes. And you don't have to worry about it. You know what you can worry about? Making more money, improving your income, which we have guests on here all the time talking about how to improve your income, how to negotiate raises, how to be better at your job. Do those things, get your career moving, stuff as much money away as you can. When do we start getting analytical then, OG, about exactly what this number is? Because I think for people in their 20s to think too much about this number, like, oh, what's my retirement number? If you're in your 20s, just save as much as you freaking can.
Yeah.
When do we get granular and get the end in mind?
Well, I also think that what happens from your, I'm just getting done with college and I'm starting a family and I'm, you know, my career's kind of progressing and that sort of thing. You haven't really gotten into what you really like to do yet. You like to do stuff when you're 20, but you do different things when you're 40, probably. And, you know, you find some passions. There's some people out there who talk about charitable giving. It's like, oh, you should give away, you know, X percent of your income or, you know, whatever you believe in. And there's some strong proponents to saying, don't donate money when you're young because you don't know really what you care about yet. Donate, put it into a donor advised fund, you know, build the muscle of donating funds, but just let it sit there and grow until you actually find the thing that you're really passionate about or the area that you want to have some impact on. Yeah, because you're 22, no offense. You have different opinions than when you're 42, right? It just, you know, life kind of evolves. I think that somewhere in that kind of early 40s to 50s range is a really great time to be starting to think about, you know, we're in our peak earning years. We're also in our peak spending years. So what does this look like from a spending and investing standpoint into the future? No one's going to retire early and take a step back in lifestyle. You know, let's say you're spending $5,000 a month in your lifestyle costs. That's how much everything, you know, to make you happy costs every year or every month. You're not going to retire early and drop down to $2,500. Generally speaking, there's some people who do that, but by and large, and you're certainly not going to do it early in my experience. So when you have a pretty well-established kind of rhythm to life and you're in your 30s or 40s or, you know, certainly by your early 50s, I think that's a good time to start putting some pins in the wall of like, here's where our spending looks like. Plus, you also have the experience of having seen inflation over your lifetime. You know, when you're 20, the vast majority of your life, you haven't been responsible for spending things and certainly not responsible for earning. So you haven't had that experience of watching those, you know, those cash flow changes over the years. When you go from 20 to 40 or 20 to 50, you see an entire cycle of that happen. You know, you see that doubling or tripling of expenses. And so it's a little bit easier to believe that it will happen again in the future. Although, you know, I still think it's hard to imagine that milk will be $15 a gallon at some point in time.
Yeah, I think the earlier you can get granular, the better, because basing it on your own goals, basing this number on your own goals versus just a kind of rule of thumb, yeah, the stickier it's going to be, the more you're like, this is what my retirement looks like. That's what gets me excited about early retirees is when they go, nope, I want to retire at 45 years old. I want it to be on X amount per month. Here's how I'm going to spend that money. Like the reason I like that goal isn't 45. It's the fact that they are envisioning,
yeah,
exactly what this is. And that makes this saving so much stickier, makes their strategy stickier. And, you know, when the game's behavior, I think that helps. But I know some people worry about, oh, I got to get this number exactly. You never have to have the number exactly right.
Well, you're never going to have it. And sorry, Doug, go ahead.
I take exception to one thing you said earlier, Joe, where you said, you know, people get really stressed about what should I invest in? And you said, just don't worry about it. Just get invested. I took your advice. What did I invest in? Rivian.
That's, I didn't. Okay.
But he also said invested in a index, bro.
Broad-based index fund.
So you get one of everything.
Well, he didn't specify that to me.
Oh, yeah. Dude sits there with us. Maybe that wall is too thick for him to hear through.
I believe also he was told to sell his Rivian when it was $170 a share or whatever it was at. Like,
yes. Well, I'm a value investor. I'm in it for the long haul.
Excellent.
Oh,
yes.
Well, the good news is you get to become an even deep value investor.
You're a deep value investor. Yeah. Pretty soon you're going to be a capital loss connoisseur for your taxes.
Figure out how well that works.
How long do I get to write off my $30,000 stock loss?
Well, and that's, so let's take Doug's Rivian though, and talk about another reason, OG, why it's a good idea to buy the index. And it's partly because an index is self-cleaning. Let's say that Rivian somehow found its way into the S&P 500. Oh my God. Just a second. Oh, my stomach.
You're killing me.
Oh, it's so great. Let's say that it did. And then they stumbled. If they stumbled, they're not in the S&P 500 anymore. Doug wouldn't even have to sell that position. The S&P 500 takes it out automatically. So in terms of, you know, how many times, OG, have you and I seen portfolios where you're like, hey, this stock has been crap for the past like 18 years. And like, yeah, I've been meaning to sell that, but I just think someday they might come back and it might be, you're like, no, if you buy indexes.
Polaroids.
Right. If you buy indexes, it's self-cleaning. It takes care of, you don't have to worry about making these emotionally based decisions. The S&P 500 is going to clean it out for you. The Vanguard, you know, is going to clean it out. But whatever it is, it'll clean it out.
Well, and the reality is that if you look at the S&P 500 on any, in any given year, you know, you've got probably a 60% chance you're going to guess wrong, you know, in terms of which stocks to buy. There's 500 positions in the S&P 500. 375 of them are losing money this year, and the other 125 are profiting, you know, are going up. And as is, has been the case in the last couple of years, when you look at those 125 positions that are up or that are, you know, positive for the year, it's really like 10 positions that are skyrocketing,
yeah,
and that pull all the rest of it up. So, you know, you look at the odds of being successful in picking those things. It's easy to look in the rearview mirror and see this, by the way. Like, you know, I can talk myself into going, golly, how did I miss NVIDIA? You know, they make these AI things. I probably should have seen that coming. You know, you go, I could probably do that. I could see that. I could, you know, in the rearview mirror, you see the experience. It's very hard to do that in the future. And it's almost impossible to do it consistently in the future, which is why the whole idea of pooling your money and buying one line item that has all 500 stocks in it makes a ton of sense, because you don't have to worry about trying to literally pick the 1 in 4 chance of being right, or not just being positive for the year, but more specifically the last year, the 7 stocks that pulled up 50% of the portfolio. You know, it's like, you can, in the rearview mirror, see that and go, well, yeah, obviously tech. But guess what? It's not going to be tech always. It'll be industrials, or it'll be oil and gas, or it'll be real estate or whatever sector. And trying to do that consistently, heck, doing it one time is impressive. Doing it, you know, consistently is unheard of. It just doesn't actually happen. So make it easy on yourself.
I love this idea of making it easy at the beginning. You know, just save as much as you can. Get granular when you feel like you're able to. The sooner the better, but don't freak out about that. Don't freak out about the investment to get. While the time for you to figure out what your retirement goal is maybe later, and that's a time that you pretty much define on your own, I think there's a much better way to decide when to go from this single fund approach to something closer to the efficient frontier, something closer to a better diversified portfolio. A friend of ours, Paul Merriman, did this wonderful piece about taking $100,000 and instead of just buying the single index, which is the easy way to start and the way you should start, how he made a lot more money. I think he made $4 million more over 40 years by being more granular with his asset allocation. So just by spending an extra 15 to 30 minutes a year on your portfolio, you can make a lot more money. But I think the time to do that, OG, is probably best in what our friend Nick Majuli mentioned of Dollars and Data, when he said, when your portfolio on pick a time frame in a week, in a day, in a month, whatever it is, when your portfolio goes up and down more on its own based on what is in it versus the amount you're putting in, that's the time you probably want to get more granular around your asset allocation. Do you agree with that? That that's when we should finally start, you know, maybe go to 3, 4, 5 funds instead of one?
Well, I think it's a good starting point. I mean, I could totally see, you know, a $100,000 portfolio moving 15 grand a year, or I'm sorry, $15,000 in a, you know, in a few week period, you know, minus 15. And maybe you're putting $1,000 a month in, maybe you're putting $500 a month in type thing. And so you got to be careful with that. I feel like that's a good place to, when you notice it, right? And I think that's his point with that is, you know, when you start noticing like, wow, this thing has really done great, or wow, this thing has really got its face kicked in, that's a good time to say, all right, is there an opportunity to have add another layer of diversification?
But I like that. That $80,000 to $100,000, I think, is a pretty good number. That's about what he's saying.
Yeah. I mean, that could be about right. I could also see, you know, if you're doing it in conjunction with the amount of money that you're putting in also, you could unnecessarily have an, you know, so you're only putting, not only, let's say you're putting, I don't know, $500 a month in, so $6,000 a year, your portfolio is going to swing more than $6,000 over a period of time.
Well, that's my point, is when the $500, it moves on its own without that $500 is more than the $500 you're putting in.
Yeah. Yeah. So you're saying that's about the right time, 8,200.
Yeah, that's about it. I mean, could even think about it at 65, 70,000, but probably get to 80, 100 is time to go.
Yeah. And you don't have to get super crazy with it. You're looking at going from having all US stocks to maybe adding some international or all big companies and adding a little bit of small. And with three or four funds, you can be fine. And you don't even have to change the funds you're investing in right now. You can just start investing in new funds with your new contributions to, you know, if you're worried about tax issues or something like that, just say, all right, you know, I've done the last 5 years of investing in this. Now I'm going to start investing a little bit of my monthly contribution in my 401k or my brokerage account or whatever, and use this international fund or use this small company fund.
It is amazing how a little bit of work can actually lower your volatility, improve your returns. But that doesn't happen when you're 25. I see too many 25-year-olds using these, you know, these products that are made for hundreds of thousands of dollars. And it doesn't make any sense to me. Just get the money invested.
Get it invested. Correct.
We will dive even further into this in the 201 like we do every week, StackyBenjamins.com/201. That's our newsletter that where we really go even nerd out more. So if you're all into retirement, finding your number about this idea of the efficient frontier that we brought up about how these index funds work, what is an index fund? We do all of our definitions over there. We do all of our deeper dives in the 201. Always free and twice a week, every week that we're on the air. Coming up next, we got a great call from a stacker who said, I better call Saul, C-Hi, and OG. But before that, Doug, you've got a trivia question for us today that I think might stump a couple people.
Sure do, Joe. Hey there, stackers. I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug. You know, I spent the day yesterday working in the garage on the old El Camino. Got her just about ready for car show season. I entered her in like a dozen competitions last year, but she kept getting beaten by some dumb old Thunderbird. Poor gal. And it got me thinking, we'd have a lot better odds of winning if I had two cars in the show.
Diversification.
I mean, it's simple math. Can't believe I hadn't thought of it sooner. Actually, when you think about it, it's a great investment. Both cars will only get older and more valuable every year.
As cars do.
Like, when you really think about it, it's actually financially irresponsible to not get another car. I've got to go tell OG about this. But first, I'll have to apply for a loan. Let me just check this app here. Wait a minute. What's this weird word FICO I see on here? Today's trivia question is... Wait, hold on. Not the music. That wasn't the... Well, all right, I guess we're going with it. What does FICO stand for? I'll be back right after I see whether or not Josh really has a microphone.
Afford Anything talks about how to avoid common pitfalls, how to refine your mental models, and how to think about... how to think.
Paula, while certainly you can mess up on $1 million a year, it is far less likely than it is on $30,000 a year.
Right.
I would meet wonderful people that were struggling with a budget that was super tight. It was 100%. You need to make more money.
Make smarter choices and build a better life.
Afford Anything, wherever you listen.
Hey there, stackers. I'm classic car collector and creative investor, Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug. During the break, I found a handful of cars I'd like to add to the family. Now I just need to go test drive some sweet collector cars to narrow it down. Wait a minute. You know what? I should ask a woman to join me, you know, like really make a date out of it. I am on fire today. I got all these great ideas. So today's trivia question is, what does FICO stand for? The answer? FICO is a scoring system that factors in your payment history, credit age, and overall credit usage, among other things, to determine how responsible of a borrower you might be. While it seems logical that FICO would stand for something like, you know, like a financial information credit odometer, probably, it's actually named for the company's founders, William R. Fair and Earl Judson Isaac, making it the Fair Isaac Company. In fact, since 2003, the official name has been
the Fair Isaac Corporation. And now, back to a couple of freakos. See what I did there? You know, FICO, freako, Joe, and OG.
Hey, you know what I forgot, guys? I totally forgot the TikTok Minute. That's how rusty we get with just 1 week off. Fair Isaac Corporation. I always wondered, Doug, early in my career, like, where the hell did they get that name?
Right, because you don't think fair is a name.
Right. I thought, well, Isaac sure is into himself. Like, what a bragger. I'm so fair and lovely.
Fair play, Gov.
Wouldn't that be better? Fair and lovely, Isaac. Time for our TikTok Minute. This is a part of the show where we shine a light on a TikTok creator who is either saying something brilliant or something air quotes brilliant. OG, which one you think we got with us today?
Hashtag brilliant.
Oh, you know what? I think this is brilliant.
It's gonna suck.
The thing the TikTok creator did today was they paired this audio that first came from a commercial with videos of people doing exactly what the commercial you're about to hear is talking about. So we will, on the show notes, show you the video, but you can imagine just how great this video
audio
is.
Audio podcast.
Yes.
Showing a video.
I'm going to tell you right now, the video doesn't matter. My friend Robert sent this to me. Gotcha. And the video doesn't matter because you're going to get it immediately what the video is all about. Because we've all seen this person before. It is springtime in America, people. Time to test out your insurances on your, on your various equipment. Here we go. Real American
heroes. Today we salute you, Mr. Boat Trailer Backer Upper Guy. With a total disregard for those pesky side mirrors in eighth grade physics, you perform the delicate yet daunting dance known as the Boat Ramp Ballet.
Believe in yourself.
Every turn of the wheel is a mystery as you transform a routine boat launch into a jaw-dropping spectacle, igniting public ridicule and $20 side bets.
I don't think so.
With the focus of a NASA engineer landing the Mars rover, you masterfully bend space and time to fit your boat exactly nowhere near the intended target. So here's to you, O master of the marina, because the chaos of a Saturday afternoon is your stage to shine.
Thank you to my buddy Robert for sending that to me.
That's so good.
He's the general manager at our local bank. We'll give them a little plug, Guarantee Bank in Texarkana, Texas.
Complete disregard for eighth grade physics.
But how many times have we seen that at the boat launch? Like 100 times, like, really? Really? You can't back up this. Like, why don't you spend 10 minutes in your driveway at home practicing this before you're in front of 80 people who just want you to get your damn boat in the water?
The other great thing to go to the boat ramp and see, and it happens both on the put-in and the takeout, but more on the takeout, is all of the marriages that completely collapse because the dude's behind the wheel.
Yes.
The spouse is supposed to be, you know, securing the lines, and he's just screaming at her like she's got anything to do with this. You just can't look good doing that. You're just a complete tool.
I got to tell you, I tried to drive a houseboat last summer out on at Voyager National Park, and I got to the point, Doug, where it wasn't about parking that houseboat. I actually had to go out on the front and say, I just need everybody to shut the fuck up and stop telling me what to do.
It's funny. That's the same thing you say to OG and I when you drive someplace.
I know. How is that different than any other sort of conversation that happens?
We haven't approved you to drive a vehicle on hard surfaces, let alone a boat on water. Who said you could do that?
I went through a fair number of propellers on that trip. Thank goodness they're rubber.
Those are easy to change on a houseboat.
Oh, they are. They actually are. They're made of rubber, and they take a hammer and they hammer them on because you rip the crap out of them, apparently.
I don't think you're supposed to.
No, that's not the theme, OG. That's not the theme. That's not what we're going for.
You said the quiet part out loud, Joe.
Wow, there was some anxiety and anger wrapped up in this houseboat conversation around propellers.
We need more.
I need video. I'm going to have to talk to Cheryl and see if there's a video.
Here's
of this.
To you, Mr. Houseboat Driver.
There's got to be a video of this somewhere.
Because they're making those out of, it was really fun.
Just because you're a podcast host and think you know a little something about everything doesn't mean you can drive a houseboat.
You can drive
a houseboat. Mr. Guy from Texas who never sees water in a given week.
Well, I'm not going to go into that. I was going to give you more on this topic, but I don't think anybody wants it. Everybody's like, weren't we doing the Better Call Saul?
Joe has realized this whole thing turned on him.
No, it's fine to turn on me. But I got to tell you, when you've got nine people on a houseboat, one of them has the wheel and eight of them are telling you how to drive and they all have a different opinion. That's
I would love video on that.
God, I'm going houseboating with Joe this summer. Yeah. I know incredibly that. Helpful. Doug, you coming?
Please.
We get a 12 pack. We don't have to go anywhere. We just be like, drive us around, driver boy.
Just go hit something.
Just, you know, we'll just both get to sit there and be like, no, it's in reverse. Use the beta. You got to use the forward. Not as much.
Use the cosmic thrust.
Check
button.
The jib. Trim the line.
All right. Are we done here?
Are we turning port or starboard? Starboard on my side.
Looks like we're doing them all. Hey, time for us to ask.
Look at the time.
Yeah. Who thought they better call Saul? CI and OG. At this point in the show, we pivot quickly into the segment where we find out why somebody said, you know what? I got to call OG and ask a question. Today, it is our friend Colin who's got a question for us. Hey, Colin.
Hello, Joe, OG, and Doug. This is Colin from Northern New York. I have an insurance question that I'm hoping that you guys can answer. And no, lucky for you, it's not another whole life versus term insurance question.
Oh, but we love those.
I'm finishing my MBA and returning to the work world. There is a chance that I'm going to be working for the same company as my wife. Our health insurance is currently a family plan through my wife's work. Looking at the policy cost, the single plans are much cheaper than the family plans. My question is, if I end up working for the same company as my wife, can each of us sign up individually for health insurance instead of using a family plan? Based on this year's insurance rates, we would save $110 per pay period or $2,860 for the year by having individual plans instead of a family plan. The employer does not offer a high deductible option, so there's no consideration needed for HSAs. The total out-of-pocket coverage per individual is the exact same whether you have a single or a family plan. Also, we are not planning on having kids, so we don't have to worry about coverage for children. I appreciate your advice, and thank you for the years of enjoyment listening to the show. I'm hoping to make it to the Boston meetup, and so hopefully we'll see you guys there. Thanks.
Colin, thanks for the call. It was great seeing you in New York at our book tour.
Northern New York, and he's going all the way to Boston? That's a fan.
Well, he's I think, halfway between the two cities.
So Albany. Cool. Awesome. Thanks, Colin.
Yeah. Yeah. Colin, congratulations, by the way, on the MBA. I also know how hard Colin's worked on that. He joins us in the basement. This has got to be Colin. I think it is. Oh, gee, this is an interesting conundrum. Are you allowed by your employer to do the two single plans versus the family?
I think there's a missing piece of info here. A lot of plans also have employee plus spouse. Maybe it's different, right? Maybe it just jumps from employee to family. But family intimates kids. Our health plan, for example, we have employee, employee and spouse, employee and kids, or family, which is two adults and virtually unlimited number of children. So I would be wondering, you know, maybe they're just showing you an abridged version of here are your options, employee or family. I would check to see if there's an employee plus spouse option, which would lop off the kids part and probably gets you a lot closer to two single numbers. You know, it doesn't make sense that two adult singles would not be the same price as employee plus spouse. It's got to be virtually the same. If that's not the case, and it really is just employee or family, then I think you just have to ask them if you're allowed to do it. It seems to me that it's going to be plan specific, but I mean, I don't understand why you wouldn't be able to do it, but maybe there is some reason.
Yeah.
Why.
Well, don't forget also when you are signing up as a single, they ask you the question, does your spouse have access to almost every plan I've ever seen does this. They ask you, does your spouse have access to health insurance through their employer? And in a weird way, you have to say yes to this, even though it might be the same employer. And if you still choose to opt for getting your own insurance, let's say you were going to work for different employers and you said, yeah, I still want to get my own. They're going to charge you more because you're choosing not to go with your spouse's employer's insurance. So I don't know how all of that's going to factor in when it's the same employer, but I bet when you then try to sign up and say, I'm going to choose the single option, if it's even, I'm kind of with OG on this, but if it's there, I bet you they're going to ask that question. Does your spouse have access to health insurance? And if you say yes, answering truthfully, I think that cost is going to go up versus what you see there on the page for single insurance.
The other thing I'm thinking about here, Doug, that's a great point. Obviously, you've got some insurance industry experience here. What kind of insurance do you have right now? If your spouse is working, and you're not working, or at least maybe, well, maybe he is working, but if you're not working and your spouse has coverage, then you're, aren't you covered right now anyway? So like, can't you
well, he's probably on the family plan now. He's probably on the spouse's family plan.
They don't have kids. So I think what OG said earlier, which is spouse or employee and spouse.
Employee and spouse. Yeah.
That's a great question.
Yeah. So anyways, I just kind of dig into that a little bit more. Again, maybe you're just seeing the abridged version. You talk to your friends at work and they go, oh yeah, you know, it's yeah, $1,500 with the family. And you just kind of are using those terms. There's probably employee, employee, spouse. Plus, because there's probably also employee, there's probably people that work at your company. It depends on size. But undoubtedly, there's single employees who have children also, right? And you're not covering two adults there. So generally speaking, there's another two options in there that you might not see. So just check on it. And then, yeah, I think you've got a pretty strong case, if all that is true, to go to the HR folks and be like, look, this makes no sense for me to have the employee plan. I'm going to do my single, and, you know, Susie's going to do her single, and that's what we want to do. Like,
deal with it, yo.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't see a reason why it would harm the company in any way, shape, or form. I mean, it's got to be the same number. So good question, though. Insurance is so complex, right? And then the only thing, oh, hold on a second. The only thing that I'm thinking of here, just to add a parenthetical, would be family deductibles. If you're running two policies simultaneously, you could run into an issue where it's like one person uses a bunch of insurance costs and then another person needs to use it. And now you've got to run your deductible all the way up too, because each plan's going to have individual deductibles and then its family own total.
Right.
And so, you know, by having two separate plans, you could run a scenario where it's like, oh crap, we both have to max out this huge number in order to have the rest of the coverage taken care of. So be aware of that also. If you're going to, you know, don't be penny wise and pound foolish here of like, I'm saving $100 a month, but I got to pay an extra $7,000 of healthcare costs before it's covered. So just check that out too. Make sure. I think you're going to find employee plus spouses available. I'll bet a pile of, well, maybe not a pile, but I'll bet a book on that.
You know what else is really complex about this whole topic is just saying the word correctly. You've shown us that, OG, time and time again.
What's the word?
Insurance.
Insurance.
No.
It's insurance. It's insurance.
Insurance.
Driving me crazy.
Not insurance.
It is insurance. It's not insurance.
Insurance.
While this is a scintillating topic,
you better go to the library and check.
I do have one more piece here, which is, I think there are some things that you really want to watch out asking your HR department about. And there's other things where you want to dig in and really ask them. And I think this is the type of question.
Working for your spouse would be one of these things you want to dig into before you take the job, by the way.
That's right. Yeah.
I might work at the same company. It's like, hold on, time out. Make sure they know that before they offer you the job, right? You know?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. That's a big one. One's not to ask, by the way, what is your severance policy?
Yes.
How much time off is acceptable in a year is another one that I might stay away from. One.
Golden parachute.
Are you single? That's not a good one to use.
Are you single?
What are you doing Friday night?
Yeah.
What's the policy on dating people in HR?
Tell me about your shoe size.
That last one might be a little creepy.
Exactly. But that's what I'm saying.
What do you think about clowns? But I think this is a good one. I can't think of a reason why you wouldn't go to your HR and ask them this. Say, you know what? I'm looking at these two policies. There's got to be something I'm not getting.
Yeah, for sure.
Because can I do this versus do this? And your HR department's going to be very happy to. The thing we get from people, from Suzanne Lucas, the evil HR lady, to any HR people we ever have on the show, is always people don't talk to them enough. They're so excited to share how benefits work and how to use benefits better, and people don't ask them enough questions. So I think, Colin, going to your HR person, I don't see any downside to taking this to them.
Unless you use some of those weird questions that Doug was saying earlier.
Yes. If you call it, what do you call it?
I don't give me some of that insurance.
Yeah, I don't know. Thanks for the question, Colin. If you've got a question for us, it's voicemail at stackingbenjamins.com, and that takes you directly to the line to leave your question, and we're happy to answer it as succinctly as we possibly can. Hope that helped, Colin.
That's an email address, Joe. There's no at symbol. It's stackingbenjamins.com/voicemail.
It's so funny. This is me being sick.
You just said voicemail at stackingbenjamins.com.
Send us an email.
And that'll get you directly to nothing.
To nothing. Stackingbenjamins.com/voicemail is where you go. And then you press a little button and then you talk. It's super easy. If you can do that on your phone, then your phone's microphone will just pick it right up and you're good to go. And then guess what? Like Colin, you'll score a Stacking Benjamins piece of swag. That is nearly all we have for today, but we've got some fun happening out on the back porch, guys. Doug, we've got our finalists in the joke off.
Sorry.
Time for us to finally make 4 months later. We're at the end of this joke competition that won't go away. Who are our two really deserving?
It's like bad luggage. Here. You just can't lose it. So we have two underdogs. I mean, this is the tournament that everybody hopes for when we're watching basketball in March and April. This is a 9 seed versus an 11 seed. It doesn't get any more exciting than that.
Man, that's fantastic.
So typically, Joe, what we do is you read the higher seed and I read the low seed.
I don't even have them pulled up.
Okay. You want me to read them both?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. All right, here we go. Here's the 9 seed, the blue chip program, the Kentucky of this tournament. I saw my math teacher with a piece of graph paper yesterday. I think he must be plotting something.
There it is.
That's from Jen with two N's. And up against the number 11 seed, that would be what? Like a UNLV or a New Mexico State College is the opposite of kidnapping. They demand $100,000 from you or they'll send your kid back. That's from Melvin.
There it is. Man, those are good.
Yep, those are pretty solid. Karen's going to put, that's why they've made it all the way to the final championship round. Of course, they're good.
We knew there were two good jokes in these 16.
So Karen's going to have those up on the in our Facebook page. If they're not already there now, go check out our Facebook page. Make sure you vote. And I'm sure a lot of stackers have done brackets like the bracket challenge. They probably thought they were going to win $1 billion or something if they got it right. It's nearly impossible, but you got to go out and vote, figure out who the champion is. You're in control of your own gambling. I mean, destiny. So make sure you get out there and vote. That's what it's down to.
Melvin and Jen looking for more. Hope you guys, good luck to both of you and everybody come down to the basement to vote. I haven't any new news on our meetups that are coming. Let's just go through those briefly, though. If you are in Cleveland on May 14th, we're going to be at Bookhouse Brewing, 6:30 p.m. Come join us and a lot of our local friends. StackingBenjamins.com/meetup gives you all the details on the address for Bookhouse Brewing. It's a nice little room. I love the friendliness there. We were there for our book tour a couple of years ago. Can't wait for people to come join us out at Bookhouse. On the 16th in Detroit, we still don't have a home. As we record this a few days early, I would love to tell you what the home is. I think I know what it is, but we don't have it yet. But StackingBenjamins.com/meetup, you will find where we're going to be. Also, we'll hopefully have it on our Friday recording.
It'll be somewhere in the northern suburbs. And so it makes it super easy. You just cut across 696. There's never any construction there.
Drive around on 696 from anywhere from Gratiot over to the airport or to 275, and you're good. You'll get it.
Find it.
The 17th in Kalamazoo is the one that's the big up in the air. It's a graduation weekend, lots of schools. I'm going there for a graduation myself. We're probably furthest away on a spot there, but hoping that we have something nailed down here shortly for Kalamazoo. And then we are on final approach on Boston on the 23rd. I would, again, love to tell you where that is. And we have two great locations that we're on final approach with deciding between the two of them, but it's May 23rd. We're going to kick off Memorial Day weekend a day early with a stacker meetup. And what do we do with those? We're going to have a headline segment like we do here on the show, where we're going to talk about some current news in personal finance, but it's going to be, instead of you listening to us on the show, it's going to be everybody chatting about it together. I'll be leading that discussion. And then we will have a feature segment with a guest that we can pepper with questions about their case analysis, their financial situation. Should be fun in each of those cities. And then we're going to do a back porch section. Of course, we'll bring along some of Doug's trivia. And in Detroit and and maybe in Kalamazoo. We'll have Doug with us, hopefully. So going to be some fun in those cities. StackingBenjamins.com/meetup. Last thing we got is we want to keep people making sure that you know what to watch on your streaming services. I tried to watch Black Sail the other day. Netflix recommended it. It's a pirate show. I watched episode one and it was okay. And I just don't know if I have time for just okay. It was a little convoluted and I just didn't know that I could get into it. Doug, you're shaking your head or nodding your head. Did you watch it?
No, but I'm laughing at you saying, I don't know if I have time for okay. Like, I'm a pretty big deal. My time is valuable.
Well, I think all our times are valuable, but when you watch episode one and you're like, yeah, I don't know.
I've bumped into a bunch of those. I know about the show, but I haven't seen it. But
it's gone through four seasons.
Holy cow.
Yeah, you know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of the way that it's shot and the writing reminds me a lot of, what's the one about the revolution? Turncoat?
Don't know. I don't think I've ever heard of that one.
Yeah, I think it was called Turn.
American Revolution?
America's First Spy Ring. But I'm not sure if that's the one or not. That's what's coming up. But it sure looks like it was. So
Black Sails, just a meh. It's kind of mid.
Yeah. It was okay. I'll let you know if I get back into it. And then I'm watching, of course, I love auto racing. So when I saw that Vice got together with IndyCar to make a series about the 100 days before the Indy 500, I'm really into that. But I think you got to be a racing fan. I don't think it's nearly as good as the Formula One.
So it's funny you bring that up. I just realized I misspoke seconds ago. I misspoke because there was something recently that I really liked. I binged it all the way through and you reminded me of it when you said, what was the F1? Was that not Full Throttle? Is it Full Throttle? Is that Netflix's F1 series?
Drive to Survive.
Yeah. Sorry. Well, the golf version of Drive to Survive is
like
Full Swing. And the second season I liked a fair bit better than the first season. I thought the second season was really good.
I thought the first season made me think Dustin Johnson's an ass.
Yeah. There was some of that. Yeah. The second season gets into some really cool storylines with Mark Fitzpatrick and his younger brother.
Oh,
good storyline with Joel Dahman. Cause he was like, he got famous from season one. He's kind of honestly, as far as PGA goes, kind of a ho-hum player.
Right.
200th.
Well, and that's what they talk about.
Story. Yeah.
Yes.
They loved his story. They loved his, you know, he's got some major health issues, but he's got this great friendship and support from his caddy. And they're just like best friends doing this together, them against the world. He became a huge star. Well, he really struggles with that stardom in season two. And he kind of goes down in the rankings and he has a really big moment with his caddy where he's got to face a big life decision.
And wow.
So that was really well done. And then there's several other great, you know, Rory McIlroy becoming the flag bearer for the PGA and then the rug
for gets better or worse.
For rug gets pulled out from underneath him when they announce the merger.
Live.
Oh, God, that was amazing. And then the final two episodes, 7 and 8, are about the last summer's Ryder Cup. Which they just, those two episodes alone, that could be a standalone.
The Ryder Cup was a ton of drama.
Yeah, they did a great job of telling that story. So
you know, it's funny.
I'd recommend.
I'm not big into golf, and I really like Full Swing. I'm not big into tennis, and I like Breakpoint. I thought Breakpoint, the one about tennis, was really good too. I learned a lot about some really good tennis players, and I love the psyche of tennis. Just you out there, you know, with your brain while you're melting down in front of, you know, 20,000 people or whatever it is.
If I remember right, the second episode of that highlighted a tennis star who really had some mental health issues. They kind of focused on that. And they did a great job of exploring just how challenging that is and dealing with it.
Yeah. Those series are really well done. The IndyCar one is not done by the same group. As I mentioned, IndyCar got together with Vice. I think they're trying to pile on and see if they can get some people. It does go into who the drivers are and they do a good job, but I think you got to be into racing. My problem with IndyCar, it's almost unwatchable. And the reason it's unwatchable is they have the worst announcer of anybody outside of Gus Johnson in all of sports. Yes. This dude has a great accent, but he's Captain Frickin' Obvious. And they also have him call track and field at the Olympics, which is my, as you guys know, is my favorite event, right? Being a former track runner
at the Citadel.
I love watching track and field. I can't stand watching track and field because NBC does it. And they have this moron who's like, oh, this is going to be the most epic race ever. We're going to have the most epic. No, we're not. It's the semi-freaking finals of the 100 yard dash, you idiot. The one that actually has something behind it comes up later. Everything's amazing. It's so
you're
great.
Saying IndyCar is unwatchable, not because they drive around in circles for 4 hours all afternoon, but because of the announcer.
But they don't. I mean, they have the cool thing about IndyCar is they have all different types of tracks. And these guys are testing what type of driver they are on more different types of tracks than Formula One, than NASCAR. Some of them are NASCAR style tracks. Some of them are Formula One style tracks. Some of them are street course. I mean, they're all different. So I think the series by itself is really cool. But oh my goodness, they get rid of that announcer.
I'll tell you a couple of other things I have seen. One's really promising on Hulu is Under the Bridge. I'm almost certain it's on Hulu, but whatever streaming service it's on, it's really promising. I think we're 3 episodes in. They haven't released the subsequent ones just yet, but it's a true story about a murder committed by a whole bunch of teenagers in Canada. I want to say British Columbia.
Good day, mate.
Canada, right.
They're the most amazing murders ever.
But it's I'm a sucker for anything that's even based on a true story. So this one's good. It's, you know, we're waiting for the next episodes to come out. It's good enough that we're anticipating the next episodes. And we just started watching The Veil, also on Hulu, is a spy thriller with Elizabeth Moss.
I saw this. I saw previews for this.
High production value. I just don't know that the casting was that great. Elizabeth Moss is a wonderful actor. She's incredible, but I'm not sure this is the right role for her.
We're watching Ben Franklin on Apple right now. Watched episode 1.
Kirk Douglas?
Yes. Watched episode 1 and I liked Michael Douglas.
Michael.
Yeah. Kirk,
did he finally die? Did Kirk Douglas finally die? Oh my God. 148.
Do you know what Kirk Douglas would be saying if he was alive right now, Doug?
I'm still here.
Let me out of this coffin. That's what he'd be saying. What, too soon? Michael Douglas. And and I watched episode 1 and it was compelling. We'll see where it goes, but you know, there was a show that I think we need to devote an entire back porch to because you've watched the entire series and I've watched episode 1, and that is Loudermilk.
You know what? My favorite part of this whole back porch was that the whole time we were talking about IndyCar, OG wanted to chime in so badly and he was on mute and I was not going to tell him. He's just over there. He's trying to chirp in. I saw him lean into the mic.
And, oh, were you?
It was just going to be a weird flex about how many times I've gone to the Indy 500, but that's cool.
How many times have you gone? I've never gone.
Twice. And it's very amazing. You should absolutely
go. I went to the Brickyard. I've been to the Brickyard 400 twice.
Yeah, I've done that too.
Fun. Yeah. You know what? Yeah.
Indy is other world. Because it's so much faster.
Upcoming trivia question, but
I think it'd be really fun.
What sport was invented in the infield of the Indy 500? It's taking the country by storm. Invented by a high school classmate of mine, guy I graduated with.
Oh my God, was it pickleball?
Slam ball.
Nope. Oh, gee, you've been to one of these facilities. You've done this.
Oh, the foaling thing.
Foaling. Yep. Foaling was a guy I graduated high school with, and they would go to the infield.
Is that where you take a young deer? Is this where you take a young deer, a foal?
Yeah. And you see how far you can kick it
down the.
That came out wrong.
hey, PETA. PETA, send your hate mail to Doug.
No, I don't know. I mean, I don't remember. He told me I don't remember exactly what, but it's like football, bowling, and shuffleboard all mixed together. You set up the pins like bowling pins.
Yeah, it's just set up as a bowling alley, and you throw a football at it and try to knock it down.
Right.
It's football and sharding and all in one.
But you do it at a bar, so you get super hammered, and nobody cares.
It's taken off. There's foaling warehouses kind of all over the country now. They're down in Texas. They're in Atlanta. They're in Indy. They're in Detroit. They're all over now. So it's taken off.
Man, one place we were looking at in Detroit that was very nice was called The Yard, where they do axe throwing. And the woman was nice. She's like, we'd love to have you. I think it's going to be too noisy for what you want to do. And I wrote, you know, thank you. Probably would be. But the woman was talking about that. And then, every time I think about axe throwing, I've never done this. I know our buddy Andy at Marriage, Kids, and Money has done it. I don't know if you guys have done it. But getting hammered and throwing axes, like what does your insurance look like?
Well, I was going to say it's more expensive to do than you think because their insurance premiums are through the roof.
It's got to be.
Oh, no, you just sign a waiver.
Five go in, four come out. Welcome to the yard.
I love it.
We should probably end there. By the way, coming up on Friday, before we get to that, we've got three great people who know kids and money. We've got a summer vacation right around the corner. We got financial educator Maya Korbick, financial educator John Lanza, and financial educator Rob Phelan joining us on Friday Roundtable. It's an all kids and money roundtable on Friday. If you're teaching any kids in the neighborhood about money, you want to hang out with us coming up on the Friday show. And at the end of that show, hopefully, Doug and I will have more on our meetups and exactly where those are going to be. So tune in Friday. Doug, what should we have learned from today's episode?
Well, Joe, first, take some advice from our headline. Saving for retirement is easy if you begin with the end in mind. Where have I heard that before? Second, maybe learn how to back up a trailer before showing off at the boat dock. But what's the biggest to do? I gotta get a sugar mama. Or in this case, maybe like a FICO mama. That way, I'll have my love life squared away and I'll be free to get as many cars as I want without dinging my credit with hard inquiries. I am en fuego today. This show is the property of SB Podcasts, LLC, copyright 2024, and is created by Joe Salcihi. Our producer is Karen Repine. Karen and Joe get help from a few of our neighborhood friends. You'll find out about our awesome team at StackingBenjamins.com, along with the show notes and how you can find us on YouTube and all the usual social media spots. Come say hello. Oh yeah, and before I go, not only should you not take advice from these nerds, don't take advice from people you don't know. This show is for entertainment purposes only. Before making any financial decisions, speak with a real financial advisor. I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug, and we'll see you next time back here at the Stacking Benjamin Show.